Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 21 at 16,391. S&P 500 down just a fraction of a point at 1,917. NASDAQ Composite up 16 at 4,504. Yield on the 10-year Treasury down 1 basis point at 1.74%. Oil down $1 at $29.74 per barrel. Gold down $4.70 at $1,227 per ounce. So stocks were basically flat today, but it was a good week. Big gains on Tuesday and Wednesday lifted the major indexes to their best weekly performance this year, with the NASDAQ gaining 3.9% for the week, its strongest week since July, the S&P 500 up 2.8% for the week. Crude oil gained sharply earlier this week as major oil producers proposed a joint production freeze, but investors remain cautious whether the cap will actually materialize, and they worry about building U.S. crude inventories. Late yesterday, the Energy Information Administration said crude stockpiles rose 2.1 million barrels last week to a peak of 504 million barrels in the third week of hitting record highs in the past month. The EIA also cited record-high gasoline inventories. Oil and stocks have been trading in lockstep, sort of. Oil down, oil ups, stocks up. Not exactly, not a perfect correlation, but stocks just can't seem to get out of the shadow of oil. In earnings news today, Applied Materials posted a strong profit and revenue forecast for the current quarter. Nordstrom shares dropped 6.7%. after the department store operator's quarterly profit and revenue missed expectations and they lowered guidance, Deere & Company shares fell 4.1%. The tractor maker cut its fiscal year sales and profit outlook. Trinity Industries down 22%. The rail car maker's forecast missed expectations. The overall consumer price index, which measures inflation at the retail level, was unchanged in January after slipping 0.1% in December. The core rate, excluding food and energy prices, rose 0.3% last month, following a 0.2% increase in December. The overall price gauge has weakened since the summer of 2014, reflecting the steep drop-off in oil prices. The stronger dollar has also kept inflation in check, in part because it makes foreign goods relatively cheap for U.S. consumers. From a year earlier, overall prices rose 1.4%. That's the largest annual increase since October 2014. And core prices have risen 2.2% over the past year. That's the most since June 2012. A new research paper published by the Federal Reserve concludes the U.S. economy may be saddled with a deflationary bias after the last recession that makes it harder for the Federal Reserve to achieve its 2% inflation goal. The bias stems from a recognition by companies that the Fed has limited ability to spur the economy when interest rates are low. That, in turn, prompts firms to reduce expectations of future cost, affecting what they decide to charge for their products and services. Inflation has been below the Fed's 2% target for about 3.5 years. British Prime Minister David Cameron is in Brussels trying to get a deal on the UK's membership in the European Union, and later this afternoon came word of an agreement that gives the UK a 7-year emergency break period, allowing it to impose welfare curbs on other EU citizens working in Britain. Now, this doesn't rule out a Brexit or British exit from the EU, but it provides some sort of rationale for staying. Apple has been given more time to respond to a government order to assist the FBI in unlocking an iPhone used by the perpetrators of last year's terror attacks in San Bernardino. Its response in court will now be due February 26th, instead of Tuesday. Facebook, Twitter, and Google have all voiced support for Apple's fight against a court order that Apple says would make iPhones less secure. Late this afternoon, the Department of Justice filed a motion to compel Apple to comply with the judge's order for the company to unlock the encrypted iPhone, portraying the tech giant's refusal as a marketing strategy. And this is interesting because the government can compel a company or an individual to turn over something they have, but it's doubtful the government can compel you to make something you don't have. Apple says they don't have the code to unlock the back door to encryption. But information from a 2015 court case in New York uncovered by the Daily Beast suggests that Apple may have cooperated with the government and unlocked phones up to 70 times in the past. The report also implies the government might have developed its own ways of getting into at least some iPhones. If so, why push around Apple? And if the government truly is incapable of unlocking a phone, well, what does that say about our intelligence capabilities? Anyway, the battle lines are being drawn. This afternoon, Donald Trump tweeted, "Boycott Apple until such time as they give that information." He tweeted on his iPhone. So we'll file that under I for irony. Meanwhile, if you want to protect your own privacy, the best bet is to use a nice long password. Even if Apple or the government develops a backdoor, it still must use brute force to unlock the actual password, basically trying multiple passwords until it hits on the exact combo. They can test up to 750 passwords per minute, which means they can guess any four-digit password in about 13 minutes. Using longer, more complex passwords renders brute force impotent. A combination of 8 lowercase letters and numbers would take up to 7,152 years to crack, unless they get lucky. General Electric has struck a deal to install new lights at 5,000 JPMorgan Chase Bank branches in the U.S. Current, the new GE unit that sells LED lighting systems, estimates that once installed, the new lights could reduce the bank's lighting-related energy use in its branches by 50%. The deal is considered a shot in the arm for Current, which represents a new front in GE's effort to revive its industrial offerings. Of the almost 175 companies that made their U.S. stock market debuts in 2015, more than 70% are now trading below their IPO prices. On average, the shares are down about 20%. There were no U.S. initial public offerings in January, and there have been only 4 new listings this month. The FBI raided United Development Funding offices outside of Dallas on Thursday without elaborating on the nature of its move, sending the company's shares down more than 50%. Earlier this month, Texas hedge fund manager J. Kyle Bass launched a website that accused the company of operating a Ponzi-like real estate scheme. United Development Funding calls itself a mortgage REIT that lends money to develop property and charges interest on the loans. Italian prosecutors are investigating Credit Suisse Group on suspicion of money laundering and tax evasion over billions of euros of insurance policies sold to Italian clients and used to shield funds from authorities. Starting in 2005, Credit Suisse allegedly helped about 4,000 clients protect as much as $8.9 billion of funds that were earned illicitly, mainly as income that was undeclared to Italian tax authorities. Clients were sold insurance policies issued by subsidiaries of the bank. The scheme enabled them to skirt a Swiss withholding tax on deposits in foreign-held accounts while retaining access to their cash, which they could still manage from Swiss accounts. Newly discovered memos and emails suggest that Volkswagen executives pursued a strategy of delay and obfuscation with U.S. regulators after being confronted in early 2014 with evidence that its diesel vehicles were emitting far more pollutants than allowed. The documents could raise the penalties for VW based on laws requiring public disclosure of problems that could potentially affect a company's stock price. Separately, South Korean prosecutors raided the local office of Volkswagen and sister firm Audi today as part of the widening probe into its emissions scandal. Ratings agency Standard & Poor's warned on Friday that it may cut the credit rating of billionaire investor Carl Icahn's Icahn Enterprises to junk status because the portfolio has suffered heavy losses over the past few months. S&P put the company on credit watch with negative implications. Icahn Enterprises has lost at least $1.4 billion in value since the end of September. S&P added that it thought Icahn's hedge fund had lost money this year as well as markets around the world tumbled. So we'll just file that one under I for irony. Three U.S.-based oil and gas companies defaulted this week, lifting the global total for 2016 to 19. S&P lowered its ratings on Paragon Offshore to D or default from double C after the company said it was filing for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. The agency lowered its rating on Energy XXI Limited and its unit EPL Oil and Gas to D from triple C plus after that issuer missed an interest payment on senior notes. The agency lowered ratings on Vinoco and its parent, Denver Parent Corp., to D from triple C plus after that company missed an interest payment on senior notes. Moody's Investors Service has downgraded a total of 28 energy companies since December as it continues a global review of the sector. In January, Moody's placed 120 energy companies and 55 mining companies from around the world on review for a possible downgrade. Google allegedly moved $12 billion through the Netherlands to Bermuda in 2014 as part of a structure which allows it to earn most of its foreign income tax free. Accounts from Google's Netherlands Holdings BV published Thursday show the unit transferred almost all of its revenue, mainly royalties from an Irish affiliate through which most non-U.S. revenue is channeled, to a Bermuda-based Irish-registered affiliate called Google Ireland Holdings. The tax strategy is known to accountants as the double Irish-Dutch sandwich. It allows Google, now part of holding company Alphabet, to avoid triggering U.S. income taxes or European withholding taxes on the funds, which represent the bulk of the group's overseas profits. Bermuda charges companies no income tax. The decade-old arrangement allowed Alphabet to enjoy an effective tax rate of just 6% on its non-U.S. profits last year. Around a quarter the average tax rate in its overseas markets. We invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com, text, audio, much, much more, including a free podcast at eatthebankers.com.